Hey there, and welcome to this deep dive, you could say, into the world of myeloproliferative neoplasms. I know that sounds like a mouthful, but trust me, it's fascinating stuff, even if you've never heard of them before. We're talking about a group of blood disorders that you could say are kind of like a glitch in your bone marrow's operating system.
That's a great way to put it. These MPNs, as we call them, are all about your bone marrow overproducing certain types of blood cells. Think of it like a factory that just can't stop making widgets, even when the warehouse is overflowing. Eventually, things get backed up and the whole system starts to struggle.
Okay, so too many blood cells, got it. But why should we care about this? They're pretty rare, right?
They are rare. But here's the thing. They often fly under the radar because their symptoms can be so sneaky, mimicking other more common conditions. We're talking things like fatigue, headaches, dizziness, stuff that you might just brush off as everyday stress. And that's where the danger lies. Because if they're not caught, early MPNs can lead to some serious complications, like blood clots, fibrosis, even leukemia.
So early diagnosis is key, but it sounds like that can be tricky. What's the first clue that might make someone suspect they have an MPN?
It often starts with a simple blood test. You know, the kind you get during a routine checkup. If your doctor notices something off, like unusually high red blood cells, white blood cells, or platelets, that's a red flag. Of course, those abnormalities could be due to other things like an infection. But if they're persistent, it's time to dig a little deeper.
So blood tests are like the initial smoke signal. But then you need to investigate further to see if there's really a fire, right?
Exactly. And that's where things like looking at your blood cells under a microscope, which we call a blood film, and doing some genetic testing become crucial. Think of it like gathering clues to solve a medical mystery.
Okay, let's unpack those clues, starting with the blood film. What kind of secrets can you uncover by peering at those tiny cells?
Well, with MPNs, you'll often see something's amiss. The cells might be misshapen, there might be too many of a certain type, or they might even look a bit immature, like they were rushed out of the bone marrow factory before they were fully ready.
So each MPN has its own unique fingerprint, so to speak, visible under the microscope.
Precisely. For instance, in chronic myeloid leukemia, or CML, as it's often called, you'll see a flood of those white blood cells that fight infection, particularly a type called neutrophils. And many of them will look a bit like teenagers in the adult world, not quite fully developed. We call that a left shift. It's like the bone marrow is hitting the accelerator, churning out cells before they've had a chance to mature.
Interesting. So it's not just the number of cells that's important, but also their maturity level. What about the other MPNs we're exploring today? Any telltale signs in their blood films?
Absolutely. Take primary myelofibrosis, or PMF. In this case, you'll often see what we call leukoerythroblastosis, which sounds intimidating, but it just means there are immature white blood cells and nucleated red blood cells hanging out in your bloodstream when they shouldn't be there. And here's a visual you won't forget. In PMF, some of the red blood cells get squeezed into teardrop shapes as they try to navigate through that fibrotic bone marrow. It's like they're trying to squeeze through a crowded hallway.
Wow, teardrop-shaped red blood cells. That's definitely a vivid image. Yeah. What about essential thrombocytosis? What stands out there?
That one's all about the platelets, those tiny cells that help your blood clot. Under the microscope, you'll see a bunch of oversized platelets, almost like they've been hitting the gym. And that can be a problem because too many big platelets can make your blood more prone to clotting, or sometimes even lead to unexpected bleeding. It's a delicate balance.
So we've got these visual clues from the blood film, but genetic testing seems like the real clincher for diagnosis, right?
It is. Genetic testing helps us pinpoint the specific genetic mutations that are driving these MPNs. Mm-hmm. For example, CML has a very specific calling card, the BCR-ABL1 fusion gene, also known as the Philadelphia chromosome.
Ah, yes, the Philadelphia chromosome. I remember reading about that. It's amazing how much information is packed into our genes.
Yeah, it truly is. And for the other MPNs, polycythemia vera, essential thrombocytosis, and PMF, we look for mutations in genes called JAK2, CALR, and MPL. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. Even within the same MPN, your specific gene mutation can significantly affect your risk of complications. For example, folks with a CALR mutation tend to have a lower risk of blood clots compared to those with a JAK2 or MPL mutation.
So you see, knowing your specific gene mutation isn't just a technical detail. It gives us vital clues about your individual risk profile and helps us tailor your treatment to achieve the best possible outcome for you. But before we get into treatment, there's one more piece of the puzzle, right? The bone marrow biopsy.
You got it. While blood tests and genetic tests give us a lot of information, sometimes we need to go straight to the source in the bone marrow. It's like taking a core sample from a building to see what's really going on inside. A bone marrow biopsy allows us to see the cellular makeup of your bone marrow, confirm the diagnosis, and check for things like fibrosis, which is essentially scarring of the bone marrow.
So we've got blood tests, blood films, genetic testing, and bone marrow biopsies. We're really pulling out all the stops to get a clear picture of what's happening inside your body. And it's all about getting that diagnosis right so we can choose the best treatment plan for you, right?
Absolutely. The sooner we can diagnose and understand the specific type of MPN you have, the better equipped we are to manage your condition and prevent those complications we talked about.
Speaking of complications, let's shift gears and talk about how these MPNs can actually impact your life. We know they can cause some serious problems, but what are the most common ways they manifest? What should people be on the lookout for?
Well, each MPN has its own unique set of quirks, you could say. Let's start with CML. In the early stages, you might not even notice any symptoms. It's like a silent intruder lurking in the background.
So it can be pretty sneaky, huh? But eventually it starts to make its presence known.
Exactly. As the disease progresses, you might start to feel tired all the time, like you're running on fumes. And your spleen, that organ tucked away in your upper abdomen, might start to swell, which we call splenomegaly. In some cases, it can even lead to a life-threatening condition called leukostasis.
Leukostasis. Okay, that sounds scary. What exactly is going on there?
Basically, your white blood cell count gets so high that it starts clogging up your blood vessels. Kind of like a traffic jam in your circulatory system. This can be especially dangerous in vital organs like your lungs and brain. It's definitely a medical emergency.
Okay, so CML can be a bit of a chameleon, starting out silent and then potentially becoming quite serious. What about polycythemia vera? How does that one tend to show up?
Polycythemia vera is all about an overabundance of red blood cells. Think of it like your blood getting too thick, almost like sludge. And that can cause all sorts of problems because it makes it harder for your blood to flow properly, especially in those tiny capillaries.
So it's like a plumbing issue, with your blood struggling to get through those narrow pipes.
That's a great analogy. And as a result, you might experience headaches, dizziness, even vision problems. Some people even develop a reddish complexion, almost like a permanent blush, which we call plethora. And there are a couple of really unusual symptoms that can crop up: erythromelalgia and aquagenic pruritus.
Hold on. Erythro what and aquagenic what? Those are new ones for me.
I know they sound like spells from Harry Potter, right? Erythromelalgia is basically this burning pain in your hands and feet, often triggered by heat. It's like your extremities are saying, nope, not a fan of this warm weather.
Okay, I'm definitely adding that to my list of weird medical terms.
Yeah.
What about aquagenic pruritus? Does that have anything to do with water?
You guessed it. Aquagenic pruritus is an intense itching that comes on after contact with water, especially hot water. Imagine stepping out of a warm shower and suddenly being hit with an all-body itch. Not fun.
Definitely not fun.
Yeah.
Okay, so polycythemia vera can have some pretty unique symptoms. Now, what about essential thrombocytosis? Does it have a similar playbook?
It can share some similarities with polycythemia vera, like headaches, dizziness, and even that erythromelalgia we talked about. But here's the thing. A lot of people with essential thrombocytosis don't experience any symptoms at all. They might only discover it during a routine blood test.
So it can be a silent troublemaker, just like CML.
Exactly. But even if you don't have symptoms, it's important to manage essential thrombocytosis because those oversized platelets we talked about can significantly increase your risk of blood clots, which can be very dangerous.
Okay, so we've covered CML, polycythemia vera, and essential thrombocytosis. How about that last one, PMF? Seems like that one has a whole different set of challenges.
You're right. PMF is kind of the tough guy of this group. The main problem with PMF is that the bone marrow, that blood cell factory we've been talking about, becomes fibrotic, meaning it gets all scarred up and can't produce blood cells effectively.
Yeah.
Think of it like trying to run a factory on a dirt road instead of a smooth highway. It just doesn't work as well.
So your body is basically struggling to keep up with the demand for new blood cells.
Exactly. And because of that, you can experience a whole slew of debilitating symptoms. We're talking fatigue night sweats, bone pain, even unintentional weight loss. It's like your body is constantly running a marathon even when you're trying to rest.
That sounds exhausting.
Yeah.
And you mentioned earlier that the body sometimes tries to compensate by producing blood cells in other places, right?
That's right. When the bone marrow isn't doing its job properly, your body can get pretty creative and start making blood cells in other organs like your spleen and liver. We call this extramedullary hematopoiesis. It's like setting up a makeshift factory in your spare room when your main factory is out of commission.
Clever, but not ideal, I imagine.
Not at all. This extramedullary hematopoiesis can cause your spleen and liver to become enlarged, which adds to the discomfort. And it's one of the reasons why people with PMF often experience a lot of pain and fatigue.
Okay, so these MPNs can manifest in a wide range of ways, from subtle to severe. But you mentioned earlier that there's also the risk of complications. What are some of the most serious things that can happen if these conditions aren't managed properly?
The big one, as we've alluded to a few times, is thrombosis or blood clots. And this is a major concern for all the MPNs we've discussed, especially polycythemia vera and essential thrombocytosis. But here's the thing that makes it even more challenging. These clots can form in unusual places, not just your legs or lungs.
Wait, clots in unusual places? Like where?
Well, sometimes they can form in the veins of your liver, a condition called Budd-Chiari syndrome. Or they can block the portal vein, which carries blood from your digestive system to your liver, leading to portal vein thrombosis.
Wow, clots in the liver. I never would have thought of that. That's why having a specialist on board is so crucial, right? Someone who knows all the nuances of these conditions.
Absolutely. And here's another twist that might surprise you. People with MPNs can also experience bleeding problems.
Hold on, bleeding. But I thought we were talking about too many platelets, which should mean easier clotting, not bleeding.
Right, it seems counterintuitive, but in some cases, especially with extreme thrombocytosis, those giant platelets can actually start to malfunction, disrupting the delicate balance of your clotting system. It's like having a traffic jam of oversized trucks on a narrow road. Nothing can move smoothly.
Okay, so clots and bleeding, that's two. Is there anything else we should be worried about?
The third major complication, and perhaps the most concerning, is transformation.
Transformation. Like something out of a sci-fi movie.
Not quite, but it can feel that essentially, MPNs have the potential to transform into more aggressive forms of blood cancer, like acute myeloid leukemia, or AML. Or they can progress to a more severe form of myelofibrosis. It's not a guaranteed outcome, but it's a risk that needs to be taken seriously.
So it's a constant balancing act, managing the current symptoms and preventing complications while also being vigilant for any signs of transformation.
Exactly. It's a complex journey, and that's why having a knowledgeable and compassionate healthcare team is so crucial. You need people in your corner who can guide you through the twists and turns and help you make informed decisions about your care.
Well, we've explored how MPNs are diagnosed and the ways they can impact your life, including those potential complications. Now let's dive into the arsenal of tools we have to manage these conditions and improve your quality of life. Let's talk about treatment. Is there a one-size-fits-all approach, or does it vary depending on the specific MPN?
Just like every individual is unique, the treatment approach for MPNs is also tailored to each person and their specific diagnosis. It's all about understanding your individual risk factors, the severity of your disease, and your overall health to determine the best course of action. Think of it like a personalized roadmap guiding you towards the best possible outcome.
I like that, a personalized roadmap. Let's start with CML. You mentioned earlier that TKIs, or tyrosine kinase inhibitors, have been a game changer for this condition.
They have been. TKIs work by targeting the BCR-ABL1 protein, which, remember, is that unique genetic marker we see in CML. They essentially put the brakes on the overproduction of those immature white blood cells.
So they're like a targeted missile taking out the root cause of the problem.
Precisely. And the results have been remarkable. Many people with CML achieve long-term remission with TKIs, meaning their disease becomes undetectable.
Remission, that's the goal, right?
Yeah.
But you also mentioned that allogeneic stem cell transplant is the only cure for CML. You mentioned allogeneic stem cell transplant as a cure, but it sounds quite risky. What are the downsides, and how do you weigh those against the potential benefits for the patient?
You're right, transplant does come with significant risks, including the possibility of serious complications and even rejection of the donor cells. It's not a decision to be taken lightly. We typically reserve it for people who don't respond well to TKIs, who develop resistance to the treatment, or who have more aggressive forms of CML.
So it's a powerful tool, but it's not always the first line of defense. What about polycythemia vera? How do we manage that one?
With polycythemia vera, it's all about keeping those red blood cell levels in check. One of the first line approaches is actually pretty straightforward. We simply remove some blood, a procedure called phlebotomy.
Phlebotomy. So it's like donating blood, but with a specific goal in mind.
Exactly. It's like hitting the reset button on your red blood cell production. And because polycythemia vera also increases your risk of blood clots, we often recommend low-dose aspirin to help thin the blood and prevent those clots from forming.
Makes sense. So phlebotomy and aspirin are the mainstays. But are there other options for people with more severe polycythemia vera?
Yes, for those at higher risk, we might add medications that help suppress the bone marrow's overproduction of red blood cells. These are called cytoreductive therapies.
You mentioned hydroxyurea and interferon earlier. Are those the go-to options for polycythemia vera?
They are. Hydroxyurea is often the preferred choice because it's effective and generally well tolerated. Interferon can also be used particularly for younger patients or those who might be considering pregnancy.
Okay, so we've got a range of options for polycythemia vera. What about essential thrombocytosis? How does the treatment approach differ for that one?
The approach to essential thrombocytosis is actually quite similar to polycythemia vera. We assess your individual risk factors and then tailor the treatment accordingly. Low-risk individuals might only need low-dose aspirin to prevent clots, while those at higher risk might require cytoreductive therapy to manage those sky-high platelet counts.
So it's all about personalized medicine, just like with the other MPNs. Now, PMF seems like the toughest one to crack. What are our options for managing this challenging condition?
You're right, PMF can be a tough nut to crack. For some individuals, particularly those with higher risk disease, allogeneic stem cell transplant is the only potential cure.
But we talked earlier about the risks of transplants. It's not a decision to be made lightly. What about those who aren't eligible for transplants or who choose not to go that route?
There are a number of supportive care measures that can help manage the symptoms of PMF and improve your quality of life. Blood transfusions can help address anemia. Medications can be used to manage pain and fatigue. And in some cases, we might even recommend removing the spleen, a procedure called splenectomy, if it's become very enlarged and is causing significant discomfort.
So it's about alleviating those symptoms and improving day-to-day life. But are there any medications that can actually target the underlying disease process in PMF?
There are. We now have a class of drugs called JAK inhibitors, which have shown a lot of promise in PMF.
You mentioned ruxolitinib earlier. Is that one of the JAK inhibitors used for PMF?
Yes, ruxolitinib has been a game changer for many people with PMF. It works by inhibiting the JAK-STAT pathway, which is a key player in the development of myelofibrosis. Ruxolitinib has been shown to reduce spleen size, improve those debilitating symptoms like fatigue and night sweats, and even improve survival in some cases.
So there's hope for people with PMF, even if they're not candidates for transplants. It's amazing how much progress has been made in treating these conditions. But it sounds like it takes a highly specialized team to navigate all these complexities, right?
Absolutely. MPNs are complex, and they require specialized care from a hematologist who understands the nuances of these conditions. If you're being treated for an MPN, make sure you're seeing a hematologist who specializes in these disorders. They can help you understand your diagnosis, weigh the risks and benefits of different treatment options, and guide you on your journey toward the best possible outcome.
This deep dive has been incredibly enlightening. We've gone from the basics of what MPNs are to the intricate details of diagnosis, treatment, and the importance of finding the right specialist. But before we wrap up, let's bring it back to our listener. What are the key takeaways you want them to walk away with today?
If we connect all this back to the bigger picture, I think the main message is this. MPNs are rare, but they're serious conditions that can significantly impact your life. The good news is that with early diagnosis, specialized care, and ongoing research, there's a lot we can do to manage these conditions and improve outcomes for people affected by them.
Right, and I think this deep dive has highlighted the importance of awareness, both for healthcare providers and the general public. These MPNs can be tricky to diagnose because their symptoms often mimic other more common conditions.
That's why it's so important to be your own advocate. If you have persistent or unusual blood count abnormalities, don't hesitate to ask your doctor about MPNs. It's always better to err on the side of caution and get checked out.
And if you're not feeling heard, or if your symptoms aren't being taken seriously, don't be afraid to seek a second opinion or consult with a specialist. You are the expert on your own body, and you deserve answers.
Couldn't agree more. Knowledge is power, and being informed is the first step towards taking control of your health journey.
Well said. We've covered a lot of ground today exploring the depth of MPNs from diagnosis to treatment and everything in between. I hope our listeners feel empowered to learn more, ask questions, and advocate for their health.
It's been a pleasure diving into this topic with you. And remember, even though this deep dive is coming to an end, your exploration doesn't have to stop here. There are resources available to help you learn more about MPNs and connect with others who understand what you're going through.
And remember, even if you haven't encountered MPNs personally, this knowledge might help you recognize the signs in someone else and encourage them to seek medical attention. We've all got to look out for each other, right?
Absolutely. We're all in this together.
On that note, we'll wrap up this deep dive into the world of MPNs. Until next time, stay curious, stay informed, and take care of yourselves.